And on this Juneteenth weekend, we turn to a book that illuminates a previously little-known piece of history. It's called Wake, The Hidden History of Women-Led Slave Revolts, and it's part memoir, part research text, packaged up in a graphic novel. Author Rebecca Hall is a scholar in residence at the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture in Harlem, and she joins me now. Rebecca, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about this hidden history that you uncovered. People may be familiar with Nat Turner's Rebellion or the Stono Rebellion led by a man named Jemmy. What did you find about lesser-known slave revolts led by women, and how did you even know to look in the first place?
Yeah, so when I was in graduate school, I began to study slave resistance, and I wanted to focus on the topic of revolt. Almost every book or article that I picked up said somewhere within the first 20 pages or so, you know, this was an activity that women didn't participate in. And that struck me because it's a little bit like waving a red flag in front of a bull for me, because I was curious about, like, what's happening here? And I went to the primary sources and found women actually involved in slave revolt.
You know, I mentioned at the top that this book is part research text. It actually began as your doctoral dissertation. I don't know many dissertations, Rebecca, that have become graphic novels. So how did that come about? And is the idea, I wonder, to make it more approachable for a broader audience than perhaps putting it in a textbook?
I didn't want it to be stuck behind the academic curtain, you know, where maybe 10 history graduate students have, you know, read it. The graphic novel format, you know, it makes it more accessible, but it's not at all a dumbing down of a material. Like, the graphic novel is a medium that allows one to do things that you can't do in other mediums. Like, there's this linear text combined with a all at once art, and like a combination of those things allowed me to put the past right juxtaposed with the present. But then I had to find an artist because I can't even draw stick figures.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because, of course, it does require powerful imagery. So we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the terrific work of Hugo Martinez, your illustrator collaborator. And some of the most powerful images, by the way, include you. In fact, the process of your doctoral research is part of the plot of this book. You're a character in your own book. Why did you choose to approach it that way?
Yeah, that was not my intent when I decided I was going to do this. But I needed to insert myself first as a narrator. A lot of the primary sources that I'm dealing with are kind of fragmentary, and you have to read them sort of against the grain. So I needed to be able to explain that process to readers. And as I was writing it, it became clear that I needed to talk about my personal investment. So it ends up becoming this story within a story, where me, the granddaughter of slaves, you know, it tells the story about me living in the wake or the afterlife of slavery. It also tells the story about these women in revolt, and it talks about the process of excavating their history.
Many of these rebellions were not only on land after people had been brought to the U.S. In fact, many occurred during the Middle Passage on ships. And furthermore, you discovered that there was a correlation. The more women on board a slave ship, the more likely a revolt. Now, this was a data point some historians had noticed before, but previously dismissed as kind of a fluke. What did you find about why that actually was the case?
What I found when looking at the captain's logs and surgeon's logs of ships that had revolts, when a ship left the coast of Africa, the women were brought from below and left unchained on the deck of the ship. So they had mobility, and they were also closer to weapons. I saw time and again women using that advantage to revolt.
The slave traders were consistently underestimating the women at their own peril, as it turned
out. Yeah, I mean, it was, I remember just thinking, like, well, this is a stupid business practice. Like, what? Aren't they getting it? But yeah, I mean, gender assumptions are very intense. And it's also kind of crazy because the documentation that is so meticulous, because they have to maintain the documentation because their slave ships are insured. And there are insurance policies that are specifically against what's called the insurrection of cargo, which is a term that is really intense because, you know, cargo doesn't insurrect. So that allowed me as a historian today to look at, you know, the details of these revolts, you know, as these ship captains and others documented them.
Yeah, the insurance element is dehumanizing in the extreme. I'm glad you mentioned it, though, because you had an interesting experience visiting Lloyd's of London, the insurance giant. They, of course, have internal private records, presumably going back for a long time. You would have loved to excavate that. But what happened when you asked to see their records to try to learn more about the slave trade?
Their response is that this is a private corporate archive, and we don't allow researchers into the archive.
Has that changed at all? That was 20 years ago when you were working on your dissertation. We're in the middle of what everyone is calling a reckoning, right? I mean, are companies like Lloyd's of London actually doing the reckoning? Are they allowing greater access?
I'm just chuckling because I've had to get up to speed on what Lloyd's of London is up to lately. In January of last year, they said that they were going to hire an archivist to work internally to see if some artifacts that they have are racist. And I don't care if they have racist artifacts. For me, I want to uncover history and tell stories, and I need to see their insurance policies, how they insured the slave trade, in order to excavate this history.
Rebecca, you said something a moment ago that sticks with me. You said, I want to tell stories, not just like summarize data, but individual people's stories. And one of the things that comes through in your book is there was a personal cost to doing that. I mean, you had to take long periods away from your family. This was very emotionally draining for you. Why was it so important to you to persist?
I feel like if my immediate ancestors, survived slavery, I can could certainly research it. I mean, it's not even comparable. And I think that the story needs to be told. If you're young and you're learning, that your ancestors were considered human property for hundreds of years, you can feel a lot of shame about that. So it's so important for people to know your ancestors fought that every step of the way. So there's a way in which connecting the dots, between past resistance and the present is a really kind of empowering act.
Well, as you're connecting those dots then, and you look at today's resistance, I wonder if, as you've studied how women were written out of the history of slave revolts, whether you see a parallel in today's Black Lives Matter movement. I'm thinking in particular of the refrain, "Say her name," which is a reminder that black men are not the only victims of police violence.
Yeah, it's interesting because, my understanding is that the "say her name" was an expression that was created specifically to talk about women being killed by police. And then it got used as like, "say his name" or "say their name." And so the original people who were saying, "no, we meant that to highlight the specific gendered nature of this, that women are also being killed." I think it's a lot harder to erase Black women's agency in the movement for Black Lives. But I think you bring up a good point that there can be a way in which police violence directed at Black women can be erased or not discussed as much.
Rebecca, one more thing I'd love to ask you about is just the title of your book, starting with just that first word, wake. I think when I picked up the book, I took it as wake up to this hidden history. And that may be part of it, but you explain deep into your book that there's actually a second meaning. It also can refer to a wake, as in a wake that you have for the dead before a funeral. Could you explain that and why you chose that?
Yeah, I mean, the term wake actually has kind of multiple valences. I was thinking about living in the wake of a ship, like a slave ship, and also living in the wake of slavery, and also, as you pointed out, a wake for the dead. So a process of honoring the dead.
Well, you're honoring the dead and you're bringing their stories back to life, and thank you for spending some time with us. Rebecca Hall's new book is called Wake: The Hidden History of Women-Led Slave Revolts. Rebecca, thank you so much.
Thank you.